Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome to the Daily Jungle. Clones, we are live in Minneapolis for Super Bowl week, which means we've got a week packed full of interviews from Radio Row leading up to a live show on Super Bowl Sunday from Target Field. This is one of the biggest weeks of the year in the jungle, and if you can't listen on the radio or peep the simulcast, we've got you covered. The Daily Jungle from Minneapolis starts right now. You know I'm talking about Jim Kelly. Jim, it is so good to see you. How are things, my friend?
I can't complain. Doing pretty good. I mean, when you just told me the temperature, I'm like, okay, it's typical, you know, right. Buffalo, Minnesota, what's the difference? I love it.
You love it. It's all the same to you. Me, I'm a California native, man. This is not normal, but you got to suck it up. You got to man up sometimes.
That's right.
And Jim, let me ask you something. I had Andre Tippett on the program on Monday, and he talked about the guys that he loved going up against and that he loved playing you because he would absolutely drill you, like to the point where there was no way you or any other quarterback was going to get up from a shot like that, but you always did. He loved that toughness about you. What do you remember going up or about going up against him?
One of the best ever play. That I played against, because I knew, even though we beat the Patriots a lot back in my day, and they're pretty much dominating us nowadays, but Andre was one of those guys, we always knew where he was. We had to slide our line towards him, or Thurman coming out of the backfield with Chip, because that guy was a bad, bad boy, and he came. And I remember him hitting me so many times, but I grew up in a family of six boys. I had five brothers, and people always said, who hit you the hardest in your career? I go, be honest with you, it was my oldest brother, Pat.
Right.
But we had fun, and they prepared me to get ready to play guys like Andre Tippett.
Jim Kelly joining me on the program. Now, you and I have been talking for a long time, and for years now we have talked about what it would mean to the city of Buffalo to get back to the postseason, what it would mean to the Bills fans to make it back. They made it back this year. What did it mean to you personally to see that team back in the postseason?
I loved it because, to be honest with you, after a while it gets old every time you hear it. They haven't been to the playoffs in 14 years and then 15 and 16. Now they don't say that. They can't say that anymore. We're back. And the thing is, Coach McDermott is doing such a good job with these guys. And I know we're still a couple players away from being where we want to be, but I think in due time he's going to turn that around. I just love his mentality. The way he goes about talking and how he talks to the players. I'm not in all the meetings, but I have good friends, Kyle Williams and of course, Eric Wood, who just announced his retirement from the NFL, and which is going to be, you know, sorely missed so bad. But the thing is, I love what they're doing, and I love what the Pegulas are doing, our new owners.
Jim Kelly joining us. In fact, go back to Eric Wood for a minute, because you've said that you can't wait to see him on the Bills Wall of Fame right next to another great center in Kent Hall. That's an incredibly high bit of praise. What did Wood mean to that team and that community?
He meant a lot. I mean, you know, as a player, you watch him play, but behind the scenes, how he talked to the players, how he was in the locker room, and for Buffalo, how he was in the community. So I understand all firsthand what that guy has meant to Buffalo. And when I said that he's going up on the wall right next to Kent Hall, I meant that with all my heart. I know the way he was, and a lot of times when people are put up on the wall, it's not always what you did on the football field, but what you did in the community. He was just as good in the community as he was on the football field.
Feels great. Jim Kelly joining me on Radio Row. You were named the recipient of the 2018 NCAA Inspiration Award. What's it? And you've had a lot of awards. What's that particular award mean to you?
It was huge. When they asked me and told me that I was the recipient, I was amazed, because I know all the other people that they could have picked, and they wound up picking me. And I just know, as I travel the country and I speak to so many people, and how many people tell me that I've been an inspiration to them to never give up, that inspires me to keep fighting, to never give up, because we all go through tough times. Everybody will. But your attitude that you have, and Jim, you know this, that for me personally, it was the people I surrounded myself with, my family, my friends, the people that when they saw me in the hospital, Daddy, my kid, Daddy, you look so great. Even though when they left the room, the tears flowed. But when they were around me, that smile, that attitude, that hug that they would give me, whether it's Bruce or Thurman or Steve Tasker or whether it's my family, that made me want to keep fighting and make sure that I continue to inspire other people to never give up.
Jim Kelly's my guest. You know, Jim, you and I have talked so many times over the years. Something I really love about you and admire about you, I can ask you anything football related, and inevitably it will come back to your family. There's a story about a brother or your brothers. It's always been this way. Now we're coming up on the birthday, your birthday, which is also your son Hunter's birthday. Hunter, as many people know, is diagnosed with Krabbe disease. When you and your family started your foundation, you knew it was probably going to be to help others as opposed to your own child. What's it like when families come up to you now with their children and tell you about the difference your foundation has made in their lives?
And I just want people out there to understand, our foundation is called Hunter's Hope. And just love for everybody to log on, find out what we're doing. What we're doing is not focusing on what we have or had with our son, because he's in heaven now. But the thing is, and Jim, this drives me nuts, is every state in our country is different on how many diseases they test for. In the state of New York, when my son was born, they were testing for 11 diseases. And every mother out there and every father knows this, that when you have a child, they do the heel prick. They send that little blood spot off to a lab. They'll test for 11 diseases in New York, 45 in Mississippi, 54 in Illinois. Every state is different. I get it. Now, to be honest with you, when my wife and I found out that thousands and thousands of babies die every year in our country because they were born in the wrong state, something has to be done. And I always say this, and I hope people don't take this the wrong way. I get it that our country's got to send billions and billions and billions of dollars overseas to other countries. I get it. But save some of them kids here in the United States of America to give them a chance to dream like I was able to do as a little boy. These kids are getting robbed of those. So we already have reached out to the president, and I know Donald Trump very well. We've already reached out. We're trying to get a meeting set up in the near future, hopefully sometime in this summer, that I can sit down with them and say, guys, you got to get it. Because when you find out that all these kids are dying because this state tested for 34 diseases, now New York, I think, is up to the mid or upper 30s because of being able to lobby and go talk. But I don't want to have to go to every single state and talk to people. This should be federally mandated, paid for by the federal government, to give our kids a chance to dream like I was able to do.
Oh, man, you feel very strongly about this, and I can understand why.
I'm as passionate as I can be.
Jim Kelly, my guest. Jim, you're working with the Cancer Game Plan and your cancergameplan.com also. I know it's something near and dear to your heart as well. What are you doing this week?
Well, this week, like I did last year, I've teamed up with Merck 2 years ago to fight cancer for so many people out there, to get them more information on where to go, who to talk to. Because when I was diagnosed with squamous cell carcinoma, I never heard of it, didn't know what it was. Who do I talk to? Who do we go to? And all of a sudden, I started finding out more information as time went on. But I don't want it to be too late for other people. So I challenge everybody in the next 30 days to go to yourcancergameplan.com. Log on to the website. There are 19 advocacy groups in the United States that we're dealing with right now for the head and neck cancer that we can help. You log on, you share it on your social page, and for every time that's shared, Merck will donate $5. We hope to raise hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars for these advocacy groups that are trying to make a difference. And I live by this phrase, make a difference today for someone who's fighting for their tomorrow, because a lot of times people don't know who to talk to, where to go. We got the answers for you. Hopefully we can help you.
Hall of Famer Jim Kelly joining us. All right, Jim, before you go, and lots of powerful messages in that. Thank you very much. Now, when you played, you beat the Patriots fairly routinely. Things have changed right now. Now they beat everybody routinely. It's not a Bills thing. I know that you can respect and appreciate what Brady and Belichick have accomplished, or maybe can you not? Because at the heart, they are a division rival to you.
They are, but I look at them, and to be honest with you, and for those people out there, Tom gets a lot of flack from people that are not Patriots fans. He's the biggest supporter of my son's foundation of anybody that I know. He sends jerseys. This year he sent me his cleats from game worn. But the thing is, what he does on a football field with so many different people each and every year is amazing. To me, he is the GOAT. Great guy, great leader. He does it year in and year out. Yeah, people always tell me, yeah, but if the Seattle Seahawks would have ran that ball, they would have lost 3 Super Bowls in a row. If Atlanta was smart enough to freaking run the football and not drop back and throw, they would have lost that one too. Adam Vinatieri kicks 2 game-winning field goals. They win. We lost. We kick. We lose. But the bottom line is, Tom is a good, solid quarterback, and so many people are telling him to retire. I would love to see that too. The Buffalo Bill fans would love to see it. But he's having fun. As long as you're having fun, why not continue to play?
The Daily Jungle is brought to you by Kalo. Kalo Rings, now one of our sponsors. They're made from silicone, and they are perfect for when you can't wear your traditional wedding rings. I see athletes, military members, and construction workers, even mechanics, all wearing them. You can find one in every color, and they have them both for men and for women. Find them at Dick's Sporting Goods, Bass Pro Shops, Academy Sports, or online at Kalo.com. That's Kalo.com. That's Kalo. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. I got to say, Sean Merriman, dude, you look good.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. I feel great.
Good, man. How are things? How you living?
Good, man. Just still hitting it, you know, but still standing around the game, doing some broadcasting, obviously, with lights out going on as well. At Tilly's, I was just going by the Tilly's downstairs, got some lights out gear in there, which was pretty cool. Make sure you guys get that.
Way to work that. All right, yeah. So they can get that there downstairs. Let me ask you, when you and I spoke after the Chargers announced that they were moving to Los Angeles, we talked about how much that team meant to the community of San Diego. So I got to ask, what was it like for you to watch that team playing in Carson this year?
Well, it was difficult initially, right? And I was actually in San Diego. I was leaving San Diego when they made the announcement. And since I was closer to the situation and them actually moving, I was put on a panel to maybe try to help the team stay there in San Diego. So we were going over, and I was driving from San Diego back to L.A., and I heard it, the announcement. And we knew that it was a possibility of the team moving, but the way it moved and how quick it moved, I think was shocking for everyone else. But, you know, I've been to every game this year. And right now I like the move.
See, I was going to say, when you watch them right now, I mean, knowing what they meant to that community, knowing that you played and you bled and you sweat for that team, when you watch them now, are you rooting for them to win and have success because you were a Charger, or is it still just too tough to see them in Los Angeles and see what happened to San Diego?
No, I'm rooting for the guys. Okay. You know, obviously I played with Phillip and Antonio Gates and some of the guys there, still very close to the organization, but you know, it was a two-hour move. I think that, you know, St. Louis, you can be a little upset on how they move. That's a big jump. If you can't,
I'm laughing. It's kind of funny. It's funny, but and it's right. It is a two-hour move. But, you know, to a San Diego fan, and I know because I grew up in Los Angeles. I lived in San Diego. You played in San Diego.
Right.
San Diego hates L.A.
Right.
Well, everybody hates L.A., right. But San Diego hates L.A., so it may be only 2 hours, but, man, it's one thing to lose that team, but to lose them to L.A., that's part of it too, right, because they hate L.A.
Yeah, that was part of the big move, and, look, I was one of the guys, I wanted the team to stay. You know, I love San Diego and doing what I've done in the community there and having that connection. So it was a bit of an adjustment. Selfishly, it was fun for me because now I got a chance to go to every game. It was right there in my backyard. So now I'm just being a part of the process and, you know, helping these guys transition or whatever I can do. And it's just, you know, once you play for organization, you're always tied to them. You see a lot of these guys that when I played in Buffalo for a couple of years, Thurman Thomas is still there and Jim Kelly, all these guys, they're still there in Buffalo. That's where their hearts are. That's where they built the relationships in the community, and that's how I feel about San Diego.
Sean Merriman joining us. I think the fans in San Diego are great fans. They're great fans. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that fan base is better than this fan base. They're all different. But there is no fan base like that Bills Mafia. What was it like for you to be there?
It was incredible. I wish I got a chance to play some players went there. But I think they're probably the best fan base in sports. I mean, it's like when you're born, you're put on a Bills cap, and that's what you're going to be when you grow up. And the way they accepted me when I went there was just amazing.
Sean Merriman's my guest. You know, you talk about how you wish you'd been healthier. The story goes, and I remember this when you were playing, I don't think any of us knew exactly what you were dealing with, but the story was you went so long in dealing with pain from that Achilles injury that it got to the point where you'd wake up in the morning and you'd have to drag your feet across the floor just to get to the shower to warm up and loosen up. Is that the case? And if so, how were you playing football with an injury like that?
You know, I look back on it now, and you always say you wish you could have, should have, whatever, and got it fixed and handled it. Maybe I would have had a longer career or healthier career. You know, starting off the way I did with those first 3 or 4 years, I was like, man, I was going. You know, I wanted to be the best player, defensive player that ever played the game. That was my mentality. And the injury hit me. The injury bug hit me, and I could not stop getting injured. You know, I had the left knee, and it was right Achilles. So when I see some of these guys who are, you know, players and they start to get these little injuries, I sit back and I say, oh, man, here it comes. You know, Derrick Rose, you know, we talk about the NBA side. I'm not surprised that he's having a hip, he's having a lower back, a knee. That happens.
Is it compensation? Is it because when you get hurt?
It's compensation. It's compensation. There's no way around it. So when I see guys who have major injuries and I see them bounce back to the player they was, I mean, I give them all the credit in the world because it's really hard to stop the injury bug once it happens.
Was an example, Boogie Cousins had that Achilles injury last week. I mean, you've dealt with this. You know what the rehab is like. You know what the recovery process is like. How difficult is that particular process? What's he dealing with now?
Well, right now, he's probably in a state of shock, right? And when you initially rupture Achilles, you don't know what happened. It feels like someone kicks you in back of your calf.
Yeah.
And you look up, and there's no one around you. And you're like, okay, something just happened. Your foot drops. And you have no idea, like, how what's happening. It's that ligament is so important back there, and you don't know until it's injured.
Well, I've never heard it described quite like that before.
Oh, yeah.
So that got real. Listen, you tweeted the other day something really interesting. Quote, time is more important than money.
Right.
Then Ice-T responded with, and you usually figure that out too late, end quote. When did you figure that out, and how did that change how you approached literally everything, life?
You know what? When I was drafted, I was 20 years old. I was one of the youngest drafted players ever, and things move. Things move very fast, and you can't really slow it down. And you're just spinning. This happens, this happens, this happens. So you never really get a chance to start grasp things until it slows down. For me, when I retired at 28. I was still pretty young, and I knew that I had to do something, to transition myself out of football to the things I'm doing now. And so you realize how important time is and how you have to, how useful you have to put it and not, waste time doing things that's not really important to you. That happened to me, unfortunately, but fortunately, later on.
Sean Merriman's my guest. Now, you've stayed busy in your post-football career.
Yeah.
Lights out. We talked about that. They can get some downstairs if you're here in the Mall of America. Lots of athletes say that no matter what they do after retire, man, it's just not the same. They miss the pressure. They miss the stakes that come with winning and losing on the biggest stages. They miss the camaraderie. Do you miss all of that? And then is there any way to replace that once you stop playing?
Well, you're right. One of the things is you can't replace that feeling of running out to a 70,000 people screaming at the top of your lungs. There's no feeling, or a third down sack, strip fumble, and you just saved, you just saved the game, and you put your team in a position to win. That part you can never replace. I don't care what you do, but what you can do is start to find things that makes you feel anywhere close to it. Some of the things give you the same happiness, the same kind of adrenaline. For me, it was lights out. Obviously, I'll get another plug
do
in
it.
There. But, for me, it was lights out and building this company and doing what I'm doing now. But to do that lights out dance after a big sack, I don't know if you can replace that one.
Yeah, you can. Just go downstairs, man. When you sell a few tees, you can do a lights out dance. There you go.
It'd be a whole lot of tees I'll have to sell.
That said, I saw you at Bellator 192 a couple of weeks back.
Right.
Now, you have developed a relationship with them. You've worked out with some of the fighters. What are the workouts like, and are you doing it to work out, or is there some other plan in place?
You're going to have to ask Scott Coker that the answer to that. It's really on them. But, I'd love to train MMA, and for me, to stay in shape, to stay with it, and your training habits. You still want to be competitive, but you can't go out. Like, I can't go out and have the seasons I had, in football. You play week to week, and your body doesn't recover that fast as you get older. You have some injuries. MMA, you have a fight every 4 or 5 months. That's also a possibility. But I have a couple guys signed to the company, and I have fun just training with them. But it's hard to say.
I know you're picking up the phone if it rings. I know it.
The right call, you'll answer.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Last thought. If you were giving the Eagles any advice, what would you tell them they have to do to have success against Tom Brady?
Well, I think it's going to be three great quarters of football. I say this when the Patriots were playing Jacksonville. What Tom Brady and the Patriots do is they find a way to capitalize off your mistakes at the end of the game. They've been there so many times that they don't panic. They don't do anything that's uncharacteristic. And they're going to capitalize off your mistakes, mainly towards the end of the game. I've been put out of the AFC Championship games, playoffs. They've done the same things for us. We've been in it the whole entire game. And as soon as we have an offsides penalty, or as soon as a pass interference penalty, or something that caused us to shoot ourselves in the foot, that's when they pick up and they understand what it's like to play on this stage.
I know what you're saying. What you're saying is you better play 60 minutes against these guys.
You better play 60 minutes.
You have to play 60
Absolutely.
Minutes against these guys, or it's going to come back. Man, if you don't choke out that zombie, he's going to kill you, right? He always will.
Oh, for sure.
Kill him when you can.
You have to. And you know, when their foot is on the gas, they have to keep it on the gas. And what happens in those situations is that they get tired of playing the same way. They play the same way. And then in the fourth quarter, you kind of get in their zone and you start paying attention to the details.
They lull you into it.
And that's when sniper that they have throwing the football, that's when he starts to play his best. And I think it's going to be amazing three quarters of football. I think it actually be 3.5 amazing quarters of football. And the last 6, 7, 8 minutes of that game is when the Patriots start looking for ways to win.
Daniel Jacobs is my guest. Daniel, what's up?
Thanks for having me, my brother.
My man, you look good. How you feeling?
Feeling good. Super Bowl weekend. This is a great opportunity here. I mean, this is just sports at its finest.
All right, so you're used to the big stage. What do you make of this whole scene?
This is the biggest media outlet that I've ever seen in my life. I've never seen anything like this, and I think this is a great opportunity for sports in general. But just to see how far we've come along, this is like nothing I've ever
been. Okay, can I tell you, I'm way older than you, but when they started doing this thing, man, there were a few card tables and a few knuckleheads like me, and now look at it. Now there are millions of knuckleheads like me, but they all got a platform. Let me ask you, you beat Luis Arias at Nassau Coliseum back in November. That was your return to the ring after the Triple G fight in March. How pleased were you with your performance, and how good did it feel to step between the ropes?
Well, it felt great. Obviously, staying active is something that I want to do. Being in my prime, I want to be able to take advantage as much as I can of my youth. Boxing is a sport where you have to be in it all the time. My last performance was great. I'm looking forward to an even better performance April 28th at the Barclays Center. I'll be headlining my hometown on HBO, my new home. And it's going to be a great opportunity for me. I'm going to have fans there and family that we adopted, too, from my foundation, the Getting the Ring Foundation, that's going to be there to witness. So for me, it's like a full circle. It's going to be great.
Good for you. I want to talk to you more about that in a minute. Let me ask you about the Triple G fight. Yeah. Madison Square Garden. In fact, let me stop right there. What's it like to fight in the Mecca? I mean, there have been so many amazing fights and fighters to come through MSG. What was it like for you to step in that ring?
Well, just the history behind Madison Square Garden alone, when you're backstage and you know you're about to go out there to possibly perform one of the best performances that you can possibly have, and to know that Muhammad Ali walked those same walk and all these other greats, it was an honor for me to step in the ring with Gennady Golovkin, and it was an honor to be in front of my hometown crowd and give my all.
Daniel Jacobs joining me on the set here on Radio Row. In terms of Triple G, he came in with a 23-fight knockout streak, the reputation for being the ultimate knockout machine, and it was the kind of slugfest that boxing fans love. It brings new fans to the sport. As you look back on that night, what do you think about that fight?
I thought it was a great fight. I'm proud of my performance. I'm proud of what I showed the fans. However you decide the victory was, whether it was in his favor or my favor, you still know that I'm a force in this division, and you still can see that, you know, I'm one of the key players in this game. So it's all about entertainment. I'm going to bring you great fights. I'm going to bring you all that I can possibly bring you inside that ring. And Gennady Golovkin, Canelo, all the top middleweight guys know my name, and hopefully we can get them in the near future.
You know, what you said is really interesting, because you're talking about entertainment. Like, you look at Mayweather. All right, I mean, this guy's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Maybe the best to ever do it, but his whole thing is the idea is not to get hit.
Yeah.
The idea is to win the fight. Let me ask you this. Is it enough to win, or do you need to win a certain way?
You need to win a certain way. I think in professional boxing, it's a fan-pleasing sport, and the fans are what keep you going. So you need to have the fans backing you and liking your style, not just seeing you win, because, yeah, we want to support your winning, but we also want to be pleased by the style of fighting that we like, which is aggression, coming forward, not being so much on the back foot or not running so much as, you know, people call it. But boxing is a sweet science. I love the ones who appreciate the hit and not get hit aspect of it. I love the Floyd Mayweathers of the game, but we all could appreciate the Mike Tysons as well.
Yeah, let me tell you something. I'm not saying that you should be willing to get hit twice to hit somebody else once, but guys like you and Triple G are rare. I mean, the fact is, the two of you are willing to stand there and trade is old school.
Yeah.
What's it take from a mental toughness standpoint to stand in the middle of the ring and trade, especially with a guy like that, when so many other fighters won't or can't do it?
See, here's the thing. All of Gennady's past opponents lost before they actually got in the ring, because the narrative that Gennady is this big monster and he can do all the damage.
The boogeyman.
Inside. The boogeyman, exactly. So I canceled that narrative in my head before I stepped in the ring. All the things that I've gone through, my back against the wall, me lying on a hospital bed, to go inside the ring where I fought so hard to make my way to be scared of an opportunity, because that's exactly what I looked at it as, an opportunity to show the world exactly what I had.
Boxer Daniel Jacobs joining us. You know, I was going to jump in because he knocked you down, but you got up. Normally when he knocks guys down, they do not get up.
Yes.
What do you think was going through his mind when you got up and you kind of gave him a look like, man, is that all you got?
Yeah.
Is that your best shot? Is that how it felt to you?
Yeah, I do. And I think he understood that it just got real and that the hype behind Daniel Jacobs is not a fluke. Because he has a bigger hype, but I think he knew going in that this probably would have been his toughest challenge. And when he got the knockout, or the knockdown rather, he thought it was smooth sailing from there. But I'm a Brooklynite. See, we have a different type of energy inside us. Shout out to Mike Tyson. He taught me that. But when you have a passion inside, you have to go in there and execute it by any means. That's what having my back against the wall has told me. That's what the doctor's words telling me I could never box again. All of these different things adding up. I've had my back against the wall several times.
I want to explain to our viewers and our listeners what you mean by being up against the wall. But go back to what you said about Mike Tyson. Like,
yeah.
For instance, you think about a Philadelphia fighter. Philly fighters are a certain way.
Yeah.
What about a Brooklyn fighter? What did Tyson tell you about that?
Well, and I'm going to tell you this really cool story. Mike Tyson was the only man to ever cook for me.
Come on.
The only man. And he cooked for me in his own house. But when he was cooking for me, he was giving me knowledge from one Brooklynite to another, from one past champion to one future champion.
Wait, Mike cooks?
Mike Tyson cooks.
What did he cook for you?
He cooked. It was chicken. It was baked chicken. It was the most amazing baked chicken that I had. It was healthy.
Yeah.
And we had hot sauce. And we were just talking like two Brooklyn guys who had the same life, the same troubles growing up. And he was just giving me.
So what was his message?
His message was to simply be the best that I can be and keep living my life in the way that I'm living it. Now, he was looking from afar. And that he was telling me things, how he was proud of me in the aspect of how I was handling my career, my life, business, my foundation, everything. But continue to give back and continue to be real.
See, now this seems like if people don't know you or even your backstory, it's like, yeah, this is great. They have no idea what you had to go through to get here. An example, when you were 24, you were an accomplished boxer. You're 24, you're in amazing shape. But something was wrong. Your legs didn't feel quite right. What did you think when you first felt that?
Well, boxers normally associate weakness with the legs
right.
with not training. So right after a fight I had, it had been a couple of weeks. And when I went to Iraq, because I went on a USO tour to support the troops and to go out there, teach them boxing, interact with them, get a chance to see their side of it and entertain them as well. But I couldn't finish the tour. I got real sick out there to the point where I had to come home early. And I started to feel a skip in my leg, some form of weakness. I said, what could this be? I went to the doctor, and the doctor did an MRI. And when they did the MRI, they seen this huge tumor wrapped around my spine. Now, I went into the doctor with a cane.
Right.
2 weeks later, I was in a wheelchair. 2 weeks later, because the tumor was growing so fast that the nerves on my spinal cord was compressing, and that's how I was losing nerves. And from
literally
the waist down.
You went from being a world-class athlete in your mid-20s in the prime of your life to a wheelchair. You come out of surgery, doctors say not only will you never ever box again, you might not really walk again or know life as you know it. As an athlete, as a young man, when you hear that, what goes through your mind?
You know, to be honest, at first, it was devastating to hear a doctor, because the doctor's orders are normally real and valid. So for me to take his words and use it as an opponent, you know, what you're saying, I can't do this. I'm going to prove to you. That was a mind frame I picked up after a while. And I said, on this hospital bed, my legs can't walk. When I leave this hospital, I'm going to walk out of here, because I was in a wheelchair when I came in. I said, I'm going to walk out, and I'm going to prove everything that you say I can't do. And here I am.
Daniel, you have that mindset. You're wired differently. You don't fight unless you're wired differently. But cancer is not like any other opponent you've ever fought, right?
Yeah. It's one. It's a. It's more of a mental challenge than anything. Because even though it physically do damage, it's more of a mental. Because growing up, we all think we're superheroes. We're never going to die. We're never going to get sick. I was faced with a harsh dose of reality when I was on that hospital bed. That life was real and that you appreciate life while you have it. My life, how I live my life now is completely different. And how I even think now is completely different from when I was...
I don't want to say the wrong thing here. I do not want to say the wrong thing here. But is there any part of you, I don't even know how to phrase this question, that not happy that it happened, but that it was a benefit that it happened?
100%. Cancer was my blessing in disguise. Huh. People have their aha moments whenever they have their own aha moment. But I feel like my moment was when I was on that hospital bed and I was faced with myself and I had to make a decision whether or not I was going to dwell in the pain, dwell in the guilt, in the frustration, or am I going to get up? Well, I couldn't get up right then and there, but am I going to get up? Am I going to fight? Am I going to give my all? Because if I do nothing, I know where nothing's going to get me. But I don't know if I give it 100% where I'll end up.
All right, so fighting is a win.
Yeah.
Getting up and walking is a win. Getting back into training is a win. Getting back into the ring is a win. What does it mean to you to come through all of this and be the middleweight champion of the world and to put that belt around your waist? What was that moment like?
It's cool to be a boxing world champion. It's even better to be the first cancer survivor to be a boxing world champion. That to me means so much more than putting on a pair of gloves. To say that I've gone through a physical, emotional fight that almost killed me in order to come back. And now I have an inspiring story, so it's bigger than me. It's not me getting in the ring, you know, hitting on guys. It's me inspiring the world through this second chance that I have. And with this foundation that I create, inspiring the families and the children who have gone and are going through cancer at the moment, inspired. That's what I live for now.
Talk about get in the ring and the foundation. What are the types of things that you're doing, and what are the types of things you hear from families about the foundation?
Oh, it's incredible, the feedback that we get. You know, it's always surprising when you help others and people support you and tell you how great of a job that you're doing and helping others, because it's so hard to get a mass group of people to join a wave of positivity in the world that we live in today. So doing this positive thing with giving back to my foundation, I wanted to make sure that I changed kids' life who were going through the same situations that I went through in that hospital. When I wanted to give up, I had family. When I couldn't do it, I had people push me. So now these are people who need that same inspiration, that same little edge. I know I can't change the world, but if I can just put a little ounce of faith or hope or inspiration into someone, I feel like I've done a good job.
Good for you. Daniel Jacobs, my guest. I got about 1 minute left. You know how the world is. In fact, I got less than a minute. It's an MMA world, but I'm an old school boxing guy. Who are some of your favorite guys growing up that you like to watch?
Oh, man, the list goes on. Sugar Ray Robinson, Sugar Ray Leonard, Alexis Arguello, Pernell Whitaker.
Aaron Pryor. Marvin Hagler.
Yes.
Tommy Hearns.
Goes on. I'm an old school guy at heart as well when it comes to boxing. So the new school is good, but I'm old school.
Gerald McCoy is my guest. Big man, how you feeling?
I'm feeling great. It's an honor to be here. It's a blessing to be here, man. It's Super Bowl week. We at Radio Row, and I am having a blast.
Dude, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate you, because most guys... That's not fair. I don't want to say most guys. A lot of guys are in here. Get the check. Cash the check. Get in. Get out. Not many guys are saying it is a blast and a blessing to be here
Definitely. On
Radio Row, man. Is that something you just tell everybody?
No.
Are you feeling that?
No, it's genuine, man. I'm from the south side of Oklahoma City, and where I'm from, this doesn't happen to us. I'm just be honest. It just doesn't happen to us, man. I was in the back a minute ago, and I told them I need to run the restroom. They was like, well, we got one. It's not really a nice one. I'm like, I'm at the Super Bowl right now. I'm from the south side of Oklahoma City, and I'm at the Super Bowl at Radio Row. You think I'm complaining about it?
My man, I will never ask again whether or not you mean that. I love that. So what was it like growing up where you grew up? What are the types of things you were thinking about? And did you ever think to yourself, yeah, man, I got some game and some ability, but did you ever see yourself ending up on the big stage growing up the way you grew up?
You know, I always wanted to. But the visionary was my mother, really. You know, she told me this can be done. It will be done. And, you know, I just always competed. You know, my dad, he raised me to be a competitor regardless of who you're facing or what you're going against, you always got to go compete. And that's just always who I've been. And, you know, where I'm from, sports is pretty big, you know. And but people just – they just don't see us where I'm from, you know. We just don't get picked up. So for me to have all the accomplishments that I have had is huge.
Man, it's so huge because people don't see the opportunity. Even right. if they have the ability, they might not see the opportunity. But if you got a mom and a dad who are hammering yeah. it from day one,
absolutely.
You can do this, you can do this, you can do this, but put in the time.
Right, I'm a living testament, man, you know, that anything can be done. And where you're from is not an excuse. You know, you got to put the work in. I remember my dad told me, and it's funny, we were just at the Pro Bowl, and we were talking about this story. I was 15 years old, and, you know, I went to the OU camp, and Coach Stoops said they were going to keep an eye on me because of how I performed at the camp. And, you know, I was walking through my hall at home, and my dad said, you know, I know you want to go to the next level, but – and he used these specific words. And it's the last thing he ever had to say to me to get me motivated. He said, you may want to go to the next level, but they don't want anybody who's fat. It's what he said to me. My dad said that to me.
Dude, were you fat?
I was, absolutely. Okay. I was way overweight. And I said, enough said. And from that day forth, I would be at the school by myself. You know, the basketball team we practice, I'm up in the weight room by myself working out. We had summer programs. It would be me and one other person all the time. And he was up there to spot me. He wasn't up there to work out. He was just up there to spot me. And I had a summer job. So I'm doing all this. Over the summer, going into my junior year, I lost 30 to 50 pounds. Because so all it was is I wasn't working out.
The light went on. What if Pops had never said that to you?
I always was going to work hard, but I don't think it would have ever been that push. I don't think it ever would have been that push. I always know I wanted to separate myself, but after he said that to me, I said, you know what? I know what I need to do. And it's never stopped from that day forth, even up to this day.
I'll tell you what, my kids are in pretty good shape. When I get back to Southern California, I'm going to tell them the exact same thing.
Yeah.
If it had that kind of impact on you.
Right.
And it
right.
resonated
Absolutely.
With you. You know, so you mentioned the Pro Bowl. We're talking to Gerald McCoy. You mentioned the Pro Bowl. You made your sixth Pro Bowl this season, and more specifically, your sixth in a row. I know you were dealing with an arm issue. It would have been easier for you to say, hey, I've done this. I don't need to go. But something Peyton Manning said to you a few
Absolutely.
Years ago brought you to the Pro Bowl this year. What did he tell you?
It was my initial Pro Bowl, my very first one that I was, you know, blessed enough to make. I was around a lot of legends, man, including Peyton Manning. And he got up and spoke to everybody there, and he said that, you know, the NFL is threatening to take this from us. And this is an honor to be here. We were in Hawaii at the time. He said, they want to take this from us. But this is something we've earned. And the reason they're doing this is because of how the game's being played and people are not showing up. He said, so if you're, you know, blessed enough and, you know, people look at you to where your peers are voting you in, your coaches are voting you in, the GMs, the fans, they voted you in and they look at you as a Pro Bowler, you need to be here. And ever since then, I said, if I have an opportunity to go, whether I'm hurting or not, I'm going to try and go.
Gerald McCoy, my guest. I mean, you're running on a different kind of fuel now. You're running on a different kind of fuel, but it's a positive fuel.
Absolutely.
It's a happy fuel, but you're motivated now. Now, let me ask you this. You got to the Pro Bowl a sixth time in a row. Do you have an issue with this?
I really do. You know, I try and look past it, and but I really do, because it would be different if I didn't get the All-Pro nod because I didn't get enough votes. I didn't get a single vote. And up until my injury, I'm going to say this right now. Aaron Donald is by far the best defensive tackle in the NFL. I personally think he's the best defensive player.
I was going to say, can we say, is he the best defensive player in the league right now?
He's the best defensive player in the NFL. I think he's a top 10 player in the NFL. But up until my injury, we were neck and neck with TFLs and QB hits. He had the sack numbers on me, but we were neck and neck with tackles, QB hits, and TFLs up until my injury where I tore my bicep tendon. I missed a game, and I still ended up in the top 10 in the league in QB hits and second in TFLs for a D tackle. I don't know what else you got to do. I guess it's because our defense wasn't good enough or whatever. But I feel like at least one single vote would have been like, you know, this guy's doing this all year. One vote? None? Zero. None.
What is that? What do you think that is?
I think it's due to the success of what I did with the people around me. If I'm not making the guys around me better, then I'm not doing enough. And that's how I looked at it. I didn't look at it as a personal attack on Gerald. I look at it as a motivator. And for me, it's you did not do enough to make the people around you better. So my goal is, regardless of the personal accolades that I get, doesn't matter. This is a team game. So if you get individual accolades at the end of the year, I think for me, it's going to be based solely off what my team is doing. And our defense as a whole was not good enough this year, and I can take that rap. I don't mind shouldering that weight, and that's what I'm about, man.
My
that's
man, you got broad shoulders.
Yeah, I can do that.
Gerald McCoy joining me for a few more moments. Now, you said something really interesting on Michael Rappaport's podcast. You called Tom Brady, quote, a large human.
He is.
You're not a small guy. So for you, for those who don't know, how big is this guy, and what's that mean from a defensive lineman standpoint?
Well, for us, you know, one thing you like to see is a quarterback that really can't see much right. because of his height. So you can get your hands up. You can get in his line of vision. But with Tom Brady, this dude's 6'5", 6'6", and he can see over everything. But the thing about him is it's surprising. The ball doesn't come out as tall as he is. The ball comes out kind of low. Huh. So you can if you can get your hands up, you can bat a few passes. But, you know, we like Tom Brady because he doesn't move much. And any D lineman loves a quarterback who doesn't move much.
Yeah, except, I agree with you, except what you don't like about him is he gets it out fast.
Absolutely.
He gets it out fast.
He gets the ball out really fast, and then when he needs that time for those plays to develop, that's why it's key to get push up the middle. And, you know, guys have thrown everything at this guy. There's nothing he hasn't seen.
He's seen everything.
There's nothing he hasn't seen, man, and that's what makes him so good. He's so resilient. Nothing affects him.
I mean, you've done joint practices with the Patriots. You've seen this. You also said this. Before he throws a pass, this guy takes a deep breath,
yeah.
and he grunts. What's that sound like, and what did you think the first time you heard that?
Well, it's not like a deep grunt, like a it's like a that's what it sounds like. He's like, and I never heard that before from anybody I've ever been around, and I don't know if it's his training or what he's done, but he takes it like a every time, and it was so consistent. And then you look at the pass, and it's on a rope. And I'm like, dang, should I take a deep breath before I get off the ball? Something. I got to do something to emulate what he's doing, man. He's second to none, man. I just had an opportunity to watch the Time versus Time.
I watched that, too. What do you think about that?
I think we know nothing about Tom Brady. And for him to give us a look into his life, it's a motivator for people like me. I study anybody who's great at what they do. I sit down and I'll watch a Floyd Mayweather workout. I'll watch a Kobe Bryant workout. I'll watch Muhammad Ali workout. I'll read stories on what Beyonce does to prepare for concerts or tours or when she's writing records. Like, there's time I read that when she's preparing for a concert or a tour or she's doing an album, she doesn't eat.
Huh.
Because she's so focused on what she has to do.
Is that the secret?
So
I mean, you're looking for the secret. What's the common thread behind or with all these super high achievers? Is it focus? Is it discipline? Is it work ethic? What do all of them have in common?
I will say this. Tom Brady said something that I think all of these people have in common. He said, if you're not willing to give up your life when you're competing against him, then you have no shot. Because he's given up his life to be great at what he does.
Is he really? Does he mean that? I mean, it sounds great. Is that guy that committed? Would he give up his life?
I think he is. Yeah. I think he's given up being time with his family, free time, just anything that goes with your everyday life. I think he's given up so much of that to be great at what he does. And I think all of the greats, I think they all do it.
You know, Ronda Rousey told me this once before she lost. She looked me in the eye and said, I'd rather die than lose. I said, literally, she's like, literally, look at me. I would rather die than lose. That's the commitment you're talking about.
Yeah.
You're working. Dude, I wish you and I could do this all day. You're working with Mountain Dew Ice and Team Ice Cold. What's it all about? What are you doing?
Well, here's the thing. I've been with PepsiCo for the past 2 years. I've been a part of the family, which is great. It's a blessing, man. And I'm here with Mountain Dew. They just released a new soda, Mountain Dew Ice. And what it is what makes it so special, it is the first and only lemon-lime soda with caffeine in it.
All right.
A lot of people like sodas with caffeine, but there's no lemon-lime ones. And a lot of people like lemon-lime soda. The sell on it is that it has caffeine in it. And there is an ad that will air the first half of the Super Bowl and it's a lip sync rap battle between, of all people, Peter Dinklage,
okay,
partnering with Busta Rhymes, and he's doing his verse at Look At Me Now, and he's battling Morgan Freeman,
okay,
who's partnering with Missy Elliott and doing Get Your Freak On. It
don't,
is a don't hilarious
you sleep,
commercial.
Don't you sleep on Morgan Freeman.
Hey, listen, Morgan Freeman, I don't know what he's made of or what he's done, but he's timeless, he's ageless, he's been in every era of time since time has existed, and he's not changing. He's done everything, and now he's rapping. It's ridiculous, man. It's, he could literally, like, read stories to my kids all day. Like, I'll just let him do it.
To you or me both, man.
Right.
My man is here, courtesy of Avocados from Mexico. Tony, I can't lie, man. I miss seeing you. What's up, man?
Yeah,
how you doing?
I miss you too, man.
How
you been?
Bud?
You look great. You don't age a bit. Even though it's only been like 6 months.
Yeah, yeah, right. Right.
But you look great.
That ain't true, man. Thank you very much. You look great too, man. So tell me about your last year. What's it like being a little bit closer to home? You got a new job. You got a new gig.
Yeah.
You always have lots of things going on.
Yeah.
How has life been since I last saw you?
Well, it's been great. I made the move to Fox. I love my time at CBS. Had a great time with you guys and everybody else over there. But I was a little bit closer to home. That was the main reason. Instead of a 9-hour commute door to door, it's a 10-minute drive. Right down the street from the house. So I'm just loving my time out there. The kids are good. Still doing the acting. I'm still going out there, presentations, auditions, all that stuff.
Dude, what's that like? I mean, athletically, you're used to being able to do pretty much anything you want to do. I would imagine in acting, there's kind of an equalizer here, right? You're going up against a lot of guys mm-hmm. with a lot of ability and a lot of motivation. What's it like when you go out on those calls?
It's very humbling. Very humbling because I sucked at it. I wasn't that good at it, you know. Especially, we're talking like deep acting. I'm talking getting into characters, not just going out there and be like, "Hey, what are you doing?" You know, and then that's it. So it's been a transformation for me emotionally because it's totally something new outside of my comfort zone. Which I encourage everybody out there, do something that you're just not comfortable with, because it's been like another growth spurt for me emotionally. It's been fun. I don't know if it'll work. I hope it works out for me, but I know it's helped me with all this stuff.
It's so interesting what you just said. What you just said is you got to get out of your comfort zone. You have to do things that make you uncomfortable. I hear one argument that's like, hey, man, don't do things that you suck at. Double down on things that you're good at. And the flip side of that is, hey, you better do things that you suck at or you'll never get better.
Yeah, never get better.
Where do you come out?
This is great. I like this Life 101 that we're teaching people to go through their fears, because life takes off on the other side of fear. I really believe that you got to do the things that you're afraid of. Stuff that you want to do but you're afraid to do, that's what you have to do, because that's where the excitement comes. That's where that adrenaline gets rushing and it feels so good to do stuff. And it's where growth is massive.
Dude, give me something that you were afraid of. You don't strike me as a guy afraid of very many things. What were you afraid of?
I was afraid to go across the middle of a football field for a long time. I was afraid to block, 290-pound defensive ends. It's all the same stuff. It's all part of that's what made me a good football player, is doing things that I know probably wouldn't be accepted from my pregame routine. I used to go out there and run in little circles to get warmed up. When I first started doing that, people were making fun of me. You have to say to yourself, I don't care. That's part of you going to the fear of judgment, fear of asking a girl out, fear of making a joke, and stuff that you do on TV that you just got to go for it. What if they don't like
it? What if it's not funny?
What if
it's not right?
What if she says no? What if I ask her out and she's like, no, I don't want to go out with you. It's all part of that, that growth that I'm into. I think that's kind of what, tying it back to football, that's what's made me a really good football player, is saying, keep pushing the envelope. That's what Tom Brady does. He eats avocado ice cream now. Speaking of avocados, we'll talk about that.
I'm going to hit that. One thought about going over the middle. We had this conversation yesterday. Going over the middle now is not like it was back in the day. Am I wrong? What was it like going over the middle when you went over the middle, and what's it like now?
Well, when I came out, I mean, they were headhunting.
Who was waiting for you over the middle back then?
All the strong safeties, Rodney Harrison, guys like that, that will come. They're aiming.
John Lynch.
They're coming to knock your game back then. That's just how the game was played. I remember Ronnie Lott saying he doesn't think it's a respectable hit unless he hears the crowd go, ooh. Yeah, that's what he wants to hear from the crowd. He wants to hear that ooh. And those type of hits, obviously the NFL's trying to get rid of that stuff, and for good reason. So it's a different game nowadays. I always look at it right now. I'm like, man, I wonder what I could have done if I would have had these type of rules. You can't touch the guy off the line of scrimmage now, and you can't hit him in the head. It creates more of ability.
It's a different game.
Yeah,
but the world's changed and the game has changed, and you put up unbelievable numbers. The Chiefs announced recently that you're going to be inducted into the team's Hall of Fame. What was your reaction when you heard that news?
Oh, it was great. I got a call from Clark Hunt, the owner, and the great Lamar Hunt. It's his son. And I didn't really have too much interaction with Clark. Oh, I was there. It was pretty much Lamar for the most part until he passed on. But Clark reached out and said, hey, we're thinking about doing this for you. And I was like, absolutely honored. The fans of Kansas City, the greatest. I love Atlanta. I had a great time. Obviously, from a football standpoint, I had great success there team-wise. But the fans in Kansas City, they're unmatched, unparalleled, just fun. And I'm looking forward to talking to them at that halftime, whatever game they bring me into.
It's going to be a great day. You earned that honor for sure. I love avocados. One more question before I ask you about avocados. You were named to 14 Pro Bowls, all right?
Yeah.
There is a story from one of them that Bill Belichick was the coach. You were playing special teams because the stars have to do everything at the Pro Bowl. And on one special teams play, you did not block anybody.
Nobody.
What happened when you got back to the sideline?
Well, the reason I didn't block anybody is because I had a lot of those little Mai Tais with little umbrellas the day before.
Right.
And I didn't really feel like blocking anybody on special teams. But, yeah, so I whiffed my guy. I didn't even really block him. He went down, made the tackle, that guy. And I'm coming to the sideline, and I'm walking past Coach Belichick. And he doesn't even look at me. He's doing that Belichick where he's got his elbow up and his hand on his chin. And he's not even looking at me. And he just says, Gonzalez, why don't you freaking block somebody, except the other word. He wouldn't even look at me.
Didn't even look at you.
Didn't even look at me. And I'm like, forget you. Who are you talking
to? No offense, but didn't even respect a future Hall of Famer enough to look him in the eye to chew him out and drop an F-bomb.
But the next time I went out there, for whatever reason, I was like, I can't let the coach down. You're not going to say that to me. So I went out there, and I actually blocked the guy. I made a good block, and we had a good return out of it. And same thing. I'm looking at him. Still not looking at me. Same pose. Got the hand on the chin. And he's like, good block, like that, and I remember it felt so good to get a compliment from him. And I think that's probably how he coaches. He's so emotionless, so egoless. I know it sounds like he's got an ego because of the way he doesn't. He hates the media. I think that goes without saying. But his genius is his ability to shed his ego. He coaches what players can do, not what they can't do. That's why a guy like James Harrison will come over there and make impact plays, because of the ego of Coach Tomlin or whoever's pulling the strings over there or the defensive coordinator. They're not putting James in a position to be successful because they want a young rookie to get developed or whatever. Belichick doesn't play that. It's like, you play well, we're going to put you in a position to be successful. If you don't do it or you can't do it, we'll
I'll tell you a mark of a good coach, too. If you have a guy like you that really wants his approval and will do anything to get his approval, and you care about his approval, that tells you how much respect that guy has with players like you. Let's talk avocados. Uh-huh. What are you doing with those avocados?
Avocados from Mexico right here. I actually brought you a little gift. You are a California guy, so I'm assuming that you love guacamole.
You know it. You
Not
know
like it.
It.
Love it. And then this is my version of guacamole right here. This is the...
My brother, thank you very much.
This is...
Dude.
This is it. So it's guacamole in there. You got your own guac. You know, people
mango? What's guacamole in there?
That is peaches. Sliced up peaches. Atlanta Falcons. Atlanta peaches. Rubbed in barbecue. A barbecue rub on the outside of it.
Beautiful.
It is delicious. It may sound a little hokey, a little crazy.
Not to me, it doesn't.
When you try it with these little crostinis, you don't try it right now. But it's going to be delicious. It's going to blow your mind. It's a sweet, salty flavor. Avocados, they are the tight end of superfoods because they're so diverse.
Good cholesterol.
Cholesterol. You can use them with salads, sandwiches, ice cream, like we talked about with Tom Brady.
Dude, come on. Have you ever had avocado ice cream?
I have, actually.
And?
It's pretty good.
Right.
It's pretty good.
All right.
I'm telling you. Just try it.
Dude, I definitely will. You know me, I don't eat during the show. I don't eat on camera. But
oh, no, not that.
Don't think that I'm not bringing that back to the room.
I'm talking about avocado ice cream. You got to get in that.
No,
too.
I'm
get
not doing that.
Too.
Well, maybe I'll do that. Maybe I'll do that. If it's an avocado from Mexico,
yes,
and it's avocado ice cream from Mexico, then I will do it.
Do it.
The Guinness World Record holder for fastest time to lace a shoe.
Yes, yes, yes.
My man, Mike Daniels. Mike, so good to see you. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, man. It's an honor to be up here.
Yeah, it's great to have you up here. You and I had a great conversation even before we started this thing. But let me ask you on air about your first trip to the Pro Bowl. What was the experience like, and was it pretty much what you expected it to be?
It was awesome, man. The best part about it was getting around all the guys. You know, you got guys that I'm in on the trenches. I'm in the locker room with guys who I've literally gotten into fights with during games, you know, but it's all good. It's all cool because we're all there. We voted each other in, so clearly we have respect for each other. And it was just fun, man. We get together and you get to line up with some guys who you really admire their game. You know, Cam Jordan, Michael Bennett, Kerrigan, Chandler Jones, DeMarcus Lawrence, you know, Linville Joseph and Gerald McCoy. Like, these are guys who I respect. I like watching them play, man, and to be able to line up with them and get out there and play some football with them, it was an honor, man. And, you know, I'm looking forward to the next time I go back.
Mike Daniels joining me on the set. Good for you. Gerald McCoy just came by, man. That is a good, good dude and a great player. Yes. You go back to what you first said, though. There are guys in this room that I got into fights with, but then we're together and it's all good. Can you give me a guy? Who's a guy that you got into it with and then you saw this guy in the locker room?
Trey Turner, Travis Frederick, okay. Right there. Those are two guys right there that, man, we've exchanged some good old blows, but guess what? We exchange those blows because we respect each other, man. And being able to get in the locker room and joke about that stuff and talk about it and talk about the being tempo setters and playing with that right type of violence and that right type of attitude, it's awesome, man. It's great. And I really loved it. I loved it. It was a wonderful experience.
We're talking to Mike Daniels. Now, you finally get there after being an alternate the last few years. Packer fans have this thing like, finally. Finally, it should have happened sooner. Finally, that's the Packer fans I talked to. Was that also your mindset, kind of like, it's about time?
Well, yeah, and you know, everything happens in God's timing. So, you know, I try not to push. I try not to get upset, but it's hard. You know, it's like you're window shopping. You're watching everybody else, and you're like, man, I should be there. I know I belong there. I know I'm good enough. I know I'm capable. And, you know, it shouldn't be surprising, but it wasn't, that while I'm there, so many guys are saying, oh, man, so how many Pro Bowls is this for you? I'm like, this one. Or there's some guy saying, man, you deserve it. It's about time. You know, so to hear that from my peers, man, it's the ultimate compliment. All that tells me is that I'm doing something right and just keep getting better. Keep doing what I'm doing.
Mike Daniels, my guest. All right, you also participated in the Pro Bowl dodgeball game.
Oh, boy.
Before we get into the details of that epic battle, what was your dodgeball strategy going into it?
So my strategy, first of all, my strategy was let me run and grab the ball and then throw it to the quarterbacks. Jared Goff, Russell Wilson. Let me get those guys the ball, right? Let me get the ball and get those guys the ball, and then I'll just kind of, you know,
in open space too, right?
Exactly. Now, you know, I'm a lineman. I get in the way for people. So if I was going to see a ball get thrown towards the quarterback, I was going to jump in the way. I was. And
I see
you
working.
I never had that opportunity, man.
Okay. Controversial match. It looked like Ryan Kerrigan had won it for the NFC when he caught a ball.
He did.
It went as a catch,
Well,
but he dropped the ball.
Vaughn on the sideline throwing balls. Okay. Game,
but he dropped it, and he was originally holding, so he was ruled out. And then you and Graham Gano were the last two guys left in the NFC, while the AFC was down to just Jarvis Landry. Ultimately, Landry wins in hindsight. Do you feel like you let one get away, and does it still haunt you?
Well, first of all, it's funny because the next day, Graham and I both say, so like, bro, I actually lost some sleep over that, but we're so competitive. And I'll put it like this. There was no way a kicker and a D-tackle should have been left over.
Okay.
If I would tell you right now, hey, turn on TV, there's about to be a dodgeball match between a defensive tackle and a kicker versus Jarvis Landry, you're probably going to take Jarvis Landry to beat
all day long.
There you go. There
all
you
day
go.
Long.
So that's where I found my comfort in the thing. Like, you know what? We didn't belong there in the first place. But nonetheless, we are competitors. We lost. It sucked. Hey, it's always next year.
You got nothing to be ashamed of. Mike Daniels, my guest. Now, the Pro Bowl is a huge honor. How did it compare to getting not one, but two shout-outs from @Crunchyroll in the same day?
That was one of the highlights of my trip. Okay, to get Crunchyroll, I'm a huge anime and manga fan. You know, I use the app all the time. So to get them to show me some love, to shout me out twice, I said, oh man, there's no way this is really happening right now. I'm in the Pro Bowl, then I'm getting shouted out by Crunchyroll twice? Are you kidding me?
Dude, it's all downhill. You should walk off on that. I mean, how's it going to get any better than that?
Who knows?
Who knows?
I have no idea.
That's why you got to show up.
Got to.
Now, I mentioned off the top, you are officially the fastest person in the world when it comes to lacing a shoe.
I am.
Take me through the record-setting attempt. Did you know that you had that kind of speed?
You know what? I always believed in myself. I knew I could do it. And being able to respond quick on my feet, you know, I was a former 2,000-yard rusher in high school. You know, some of those skills have not left me. I wrestled in high school. You have to be very quick. You know, I'm a interior defensive lineman. Things happen fast there. So the suddenness that it takes to string those the laces through the shoe, I'm built for it.
That's awesome.
In fact, I'll do it again to break my own record.
Do you think you can?
I know I can.
How much faster can you go?
About 15 seconds faster.
Come on, man.
Yeah, 15. 15.
I think it's like a mental barrier. Once you get past that time, it's like the four-minute mile. Once you do it once, the whole world opens up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's endless possibilities.
But
endless.
Bro, since you're the man and you're the king, are they not coming at you now? Do other guys who are tying shoes fast want to test you all the time?
Yeah, you know what?
Do you get that in public? Do they roll up on you like that?
Yes, they do. In fact, a couple people here, they didn't say, hey, man, Mike Pegger player, said, hey, get us a world record holder shoelacer, man. That's you.
That's what I'm saying, that's right? You probably can't walk anywhere because of that.
I can't, man. It's made me famous.
Yeah, right?
It's made me famous.
That's the burden you carry. That's part of it.
I have to.
Yeah, but on top of that, you came this close to being the record holder for breaking five pinatas the fastest. Is that true?
I was. They explained
what happened on the record attempt.
So I went through flawlessly. You know, I hit the first little pony thing, whatever, split. I mean, it cracked like an egg, man. All the little candies come out. I said, oh, this is good. So as I'm rushing, as beads of chocolate is falling down on me. You know what I'm saying? And I'm running through it like it's rain. I'm hitting it. Ah, hitting a little hot. They blew the whistle and they stopped it. They said, we have to spin you three times before you hit each bag. Oh, I lost it. I lost it.
Yeah, right?
I hit the last one, threw my bat and left.
Yeah, man, you can't quit. You know that. You're an athlete.
Yeah, but, man,
They changed the rules on you.
They changed the rules on me. I said, you know what? I'm not going to play in a game where you guys are not even sure yourselves of what the rules are. I'm not going to be part of that. That's a very dysfunctional organization, man. They're doing things the wrong way. Who wants to be part of that?
You are the best. You can't be part of that, I guess. When you lay it out like that, you can't be a part of that.
And then who looks like the bad guy? Me or them?
You?
There you go.
Hey, man, winners never quit. Quitters never win. It looks like you quit. However, now we know the inside story.
Now we know
how that went down.
Three sides to every story.
Three sides to every story. Dude, there's even more. I mean, as fun as this all was, as great as the Pro Bowl was, I saw you went to Comic-Con in San Diego.
Yes,
from the looks of it and from the looks of what you did that day, that looked like that might have been your best day ever. Where would that rank as a day?
So, other than the day of turning my life over to Christ, getting married, my first child, second, third, or fourth, this definitely is in one of the best days of my life. Oh, yeah, look at that picture, man. You know what I'm saying? It was one of the best days of my life.
Dude, what a look, man.
Yeah.
Where did you come up with that look?
Oh, well, first of all,
for those who don't know, what is it?
So that's the Raikage from this anime called Naruto. And it's funny because my he has a brother. And him and his brother are like carbon copies of my brother and I. So I said, you know what? I'm going to dress up as him. You dress up as his brother. You know what I'm saying? It's my younger brother. And we pulled it off perfectly. So many people wanted to stop and take pictures with and of us. And I'm like, wow, I would have been that person wanting to take pictures back in the day. And now I'm the guy they want to take pictures of. Not knowing that I play in the NFL. That was the best part about it. Nobody there had any clue that I was an NFL football player.
Dude,
all they saw was an awesome, awesome
cosplay. Dude, can I tell you something? When somebody stops you now for a picture or an autograph, you got to be thinking, okay, cool, but for what?
For what?
For what?
For what? Lacing shoes?
Busting pinatas?
Or being a cosplayer? NFL's fourth.
Dude, I forgot why we booked you on this show even.
Hey, we've talked about everything, man.
Everything.
I'm a man of many talents.
Everything. You
call me
are.
James Bond.
I got 60 seconds. What about Mike Pettine, your new D coordinator?
I love him.
What do you make of the hire?
I love him. I'm going to tell you, I told everybody, he is going to make us great. Mark my words. I'm going to say it boldly because I trust him and I believe in him, man. He's coming with the right, mean, nasty attitude that I have, that I've been calling for years, and he's ready. He wants to bring that because that's what he's demanded out of his guys for so long. He's going to bring those kind of guys in. So, yeah, obviously it's going to be Aaron's team, but because he's a Hall of Famer. He's one of the greatest to ever do it. But it's about time we start challenging him.
Patrick Peterson's my guest. PP, good to see you, man. How are you?
Hello, Jim. I'm hanging in there.
Man, it's so good to see you. Now, you had a big game in the Pro Bowl. Let me start right there. You had a couple of picks.
Uh-huh.
You were going to be the defensive MVP.
Yep.
You put that thing in the bank already, and then the AFC comes back, and they rip that game and your hardware.
Oh,
how
man.
Frustrating was it to lose the game and the award because it was yours?
It was very, very frustrating for the simple fact that, you know, I was playing in Orlando. I had a ton of my family there. That's my home state. And I thought it was a heck of a performance to win the hardware and also get the win. But evidently, it wasn't. We fell a little short. Definitely a little heartbroken, but it is what it is.
It is what it is. Wasn't meant to be. Patrick Peterson, my guest. I mentioned 7 Pro Bowls in 7 years. But this year, you were not voted to the All-Pro first or second team.
Mm-hmm.
What's your reaction? Do you have an issue with that?
I do. I definitely have an issue with that. You know, I was definitely a little disappointed because, you know, I'm a guy, for the last three seasons, I've been the least targeted corner in the league. And I feel in 2016 I had a better year than the year I made All-Pro. And it's I don't know if it's a common factoring in by the team success, because it's starting to feel to me every team that's in the NFC or AFC championship, one or two of those guys are on the All-Pro team. So I think guys need to start looking at game tape. Look how I affect the game. I get targeted once out of every 22 pass plays.
All right, so what about that? I mean, it's one thing to have team success. I mean, that's definitely important, but it's a numbers thing, right? They want the numbers,
right?
But you're not getting numbers if they're not throwing your way. I think you need to come up with a way to quantify this.
Yeah.
It's got to be a stat. They don't throw at me stat.
Right, because if a guy's getting 90 targets, he's getting opportunities. If I'm getting 60, like I got targeted 56 times this year. That's the lowest in the last three. That's about my average in the last three seasons. So how am I able to make plays, especially the way they're targeting me with screens and pick plays and all that stuff.
Right. So how's that feel?
I mean, how what feels? Getting screened all day?
Yeah, when they're coming at you like that. They won't throw at you, and then they pick you all day long.
Yeah, it's frustrating because I call it the Pat P rule. You know, because I'm the only corner. It has to be a stat on that as well. I'm the only corner that get picked the most and screened the most. That's what they get majority of their catches from, when they screen and pick me. And it's frustrating at times because I put so much hard work in my technique as far as trying to disrupt the timing between the receiver in the quarterback. Like, receivers don't even line up outside the numbers no more. They want to be in a condensed formation, so I can't be in bump and run no more. The people who are voting, they need to look at those things. Look how I affect the game. Look how offensive coordinators are game planning against 21.
You know, it's like you work your whole life, man. You want that Ferrari so bad.
Ferrari
so bad, but you can't get it out of the garage.
Right.
Yeah, you can't find the keys, mm-hmm. or it's got no gas. That thing's just sitting there. Listen, I had Kurt Warner on the show, and yesterday he talked about he expects Larry Fitzgerald to come back next season.
Mm-hmm.
What's your sense on that, and what would your pitch be to him to come back another year?
I mean, honestly, my gut feeling, it's the offseason now. Me and Larry, we've been golfing since the season been over, but we don't talk football. That's our one rule on the golf course.
Seriously, dude, it doesn't even come up?
We do not talk football. And my gut feeling, though, I think Larry will be back because he's playing too well. You know, he's playing lights out. He just had another 100-yard year, 1,000 yards, you know, 5-plus touchdowns, whatever the number is. He's just playing too well to hang it up. And, I mean, he's chasing history at the same time as well. So I can't see him leaving all of this on the table right now.
Patrick Peterson, my guest. Let me tell you about Larry Fitzgerald. I mean, when you think of him, if you don't know him the way you know him,
mm-hmm.
fans will think of him as one of the all-time great players, one of the all-time great guys. Both true.
Right.
My man talks junk the best of them.
Oh,
right?
Man.
Let's not get this twisted. You tell me I'm wrong, right?
No, you're spot on.
All day, and it never stops.
All day.
It's mostly clean, though, right?
It's
clean.
Very clean.
But my man will talk smack to anybody. I was
to
in a
anybody.
Restaurant one night, minding my own business, and he lit me up. It's funny like that. Here's an example. When you first got there, your first rep against him, what did he say to you when you first got there?
He told me he was going to light me up. He told me I'm going to work you all day, young rookie. And I kid you not, it was either the first rep or the second rep. He got a one-hand catch on me in the back of the end zone. He signed it for me, and I still got it in my office. But from that point on, that actually made me hungrier. You know, that him talking to me that way, it just made me grind that much harder, because after year two, he wasn't catching the ball much after that.
All right, let me ask you this then, because what he said, this is unbelievable. He said, quote, "I've tossed him around like a rag doll.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait until his daughter is old enough so I can tell her Uncle Fitz." Your daughter.
He brought my daughter
quote,
into this.
"So I can tell her Uncle Fitz used to dominate your dad."
That's classic Fitz, man. That is
classic. Right?
And he did it with a smile because he know only partial of that story was true.
Yeah, but it changed. It changed. Now, you told Pete Prisco at CBSSports.com, Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback to ever play, and one of the things that you admire most about him is that he does it with new pieces every single year. I mean, dude, I know this is a different guy, but Father Time will never lose. I mean, at some point, there's got to be a diminishment of his ability, right? When?
I have no idea. He's another one. I mean, he's just playing too well to hang it up. I believe him.
Do you really?
No doubt about
45,
it. 45,
47?
45, at least 43.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, the way he's able to attack the game. And, I mean, at this stage in Tom's career, he's seen it all. He's been through it all. He knows how to protect himself. He's not – it's not – you never see Tom Brady taking a devastating blow.
That's true.
Like, you would never see that. You know, he's going to walk out on his time, and I think –
because he gets it out so quickly or because of the guys in front of him? Why does he not take those kill shots?
I think it's definitely the system. He definitely gets the ball out quick. If he's back there patting the ball all day – he know how to maneuver. He has great pocket presence. And if it's not there, he's not making any mistakes. You know, he's not turning the ball over. He's not putting his team in any bad situations.
You're the official social media correspondent for AT&T.
Yep.
Audience Sports this week. What are you doing with them, and what are your plans for the rest of the week?
Man, the rest of the week, like you said, I will be the AT&T Audience Sport correspondent. It's going to be fun. We're going to take the fans backstage to the DirecTV Super Party that J-Lo will be hosting and performing. Be on the hitting the red carpet here tonight at the EA Matt and Bowl party. It's going to be a lot of exclusive interviews that I will be hosting, and it should be fun. You know, this is my first time doing it. I'm excited, and I'm going to try to stay warm out there on that red carpet.
Dude, it's cold. You probably got a newfound respect for a knucklehead like me, man. This stuff's harder than it looks, right?
It really is. Also, you got to find more information, you got to follow Audience Sports on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. But this is way too cold for me. Way too cold.
You're Arizona, I'm California. It's way too cold for all of us. Hey, listen, really quick before I forget, you guys need a quarterback.
Yep.
Who makes sense to you? Who would you like to see a team go after?
I would love to see us go after either Nick Foles or Kirk Cousins.
Yeah. Really? What do you like about those guys?
I mean, Kirk has a great touch, a great – I mean, he throws a football the way it needs to be thrown. And I think if you put some pieces around him, get him some offensive weapons as far as a running back, get him a nice running game, which we have, get him some reliable tight ends, young receiver, which we have as well, and some nice pieces on the outside. You know, you have Larry inside. Hopefully we can get sorted out who's going to be on the outside for us. And our defense is always top 10, you know, every single year. So I believe and it's warm. You have to worry about no cold weather. You're going to be playing inside on the best turf in the NFL. I mean, what more could you ask for?
Tequila Spikes, I love you, man.
Hey, man, I love you too, brother.
I mean this sincerely. You and I, we go way, way, way back, and I can't tell you how much I respect and admire you. It is so good to see you.
And you know what? That's something that you just don't toss around like that, because we got great history with each other, but it's more so candid history, you know, and so the respect that I have for you and how you treat the game and how you present the game, I appreciate that.
I appreciate you, man. Yeah. I appreciate you saying that. You know, I had Kyle Williams on the program after the Bills clinched the playoff spot. He talked about the influence you had on him and that he hoped that you were smiling. What was your reaction when the Bills made the playoffs and when Kyle name-dropped you the way that he did?
I got chills.
Right.
I really got chills, because I remember in 06, Kyle came into that locker room as a youngster. But he came in as a dry sponge. He was willing and ready to absorb anything that you gave him. Blood, sweat, tears, stories. He wanted to be great. And to see him be there 10-plus years, the Buffalo Bills never made the playoffs, started going all the way back in 99, and they finally made it, but he had his kids there with him. I felt like a piece of me made the playoffs. You know, that's how happy I was for him. And but it could not have happened to a better guy, the way that he leads and the way that he lives his life.
You know, that's so great that you feel like you have equity in that. And by the way, he was not the only guy talking about you like that. Bills head coach Sean McDermott talked about you and the fact that you came to Philadelphia when he was a young assistant.
Yep.
And talked about how much the playoffs meant. He said that he didn't understand it at the time, but he does now. All right, so we're talking about guys like Kyle, Sean McDermott. How does it feel to know that you had that big of an impact on that many people in that game?
You know what? I never slowed down to really think about it. And for me, and I think a lot of it just goes back to leadership. You know, I was nominated captain 13 out of 15 seasons. And because of that, I think it's the way that I live my life and just how I saw everything. I don't care. I remember one year we went 2-14, the Cincinnati Bengals.
Oh, yeah.
And that was one of the worst seasons ever. But when I walked away, I had some unique innate ability to brainwash myself to make my risk, to make me really think, you know what, we really were not that bad, so we got a chance to win it next year. But you know what, though? It made me into the man who I am today.
We're talking to Takeo Spikes. What a great phrase that is. You were able to brainwash yourself. And listen, I mean, everybody's so caught up in how do we lose weight? How do we gain strength? We're not thinking about training the mind like a muscle, right? Don't you need to train the mind the way you would any other muscle? In fact, isn't it more important than any other muscle?
It's so important. Because if you don't tap into certain areas, you can't get to where you want to go. Everybody wants to. Everybody wants to, but everybody is not willing and able. That's the difference. And in order for you to get that or to be able to achieve that, from a mind standpoint, you got to do some things that haven't been done before. You got to put yourself in uncomfortable situations to be able to expect and see that growth that comes after that. I mean, it never stops. You're always going to face those opportunities. And when that time pops up, you have to realize I got to push through it in order to get to where I need to
go. It is a common theme that's come up the entire week. When you're with guys that are super achievers, this notion of get comfortable being uncomfortable. Now, I've got your book on the set right here. You have a book of photography. It's called Behind the Mask.
Yeah.
It's a collection of photographs and stories from some of the best defensive players to ever play the game. Let me start with this notion of photography. Your mother got you into it when you were young. How did that start?
Well, she was great at capturing the moment, Roman. And the thing about her, when I saw it, I was happy, but then I got, it was bittersweet. And she said, why are you looking like that? I'm like, Ma, it ain't that hard to take a picture. Let me show you. Little did I know, I'm teaching her how to take a picture with clarity, but I'm getting hooked. And I got the photography bug. And so it traveled with me, and I really didn't realize it until we went to play in this international game in London. And when we took the trip over, my mother came with me, and so we went out for a whole day shooting pictures together. And I remember getting on the plane, my teammates, Justin Smith, Patrick Willis, even Coach Singletary. Takeo, what are you doing with that camera around your neck? You're too big to be having a camera. Before I knew it, on the way back after we played the game, one guy said, let me look at some of the images. One guy turned into five turned into 15. Before I knew it, the entire team was over my shoulder like, oh, yeah, let me get a copy of that. And I was like, nah, you the same dude who was telling me, you're too big to have a camera. So you know what? Kick rocks.
Takeo Spikes joining us. It's so great, but it's not just the images, all right? You and I have talked about this. It's not just the images. The creation of this book, quote, this is you, I'm infatuated by greatness. I have always been that way. Very inquisitive. I just want to know what makes people great, what makes them tick. End of quote. From the conversations that you have had with the guys that are in the book, what's the common thread? What makes the best of the best tick?
Focus and circumstances. That these are the two things that you will pull out of this book, out of every guy. And every circumstance is different, but the one thing that they all had in common that was the same, that Hawkeye focus on knowing, I want to change my circumstance. I even give you an example. You look at Willie Lanier. I thought the first thing he would have told me is Takeo, you know, even though I was the first black linebacker inducted into the Hall of Fame, I loved the game of football. That wasn't the case. He said, Takeo, I didn't love the game of football. I'm like, no, Mr. Willie, hold up. There's no way you're telling me
you
this.
Don't want to hear that.
No. I said, no, you got to give me. He was like, no. He said, let me tell you what really drove me. I was in my mother's living room. My mother and father brought home a magazine, business magazine. I saw it on the floor. I read through it. And that was the first time I realized the world was so much bigger than the block I grew up on in Richmond, Virginia. Mm. And that's what motivated him to get to the next level. He used football as a platform to be able to get into other things as far as what he wanted to do. You know, and so for me, that was so, I mean, it was crazy. I couldn't believe it. I just thought every guy would just be sold out, diehard over football. But that wasn't the case for him. But it was the focus and the drive to change the circumstances as far as being able to see more. Once you're exposed to more, when you know better, you do better.
It seems counterintuitive that you could be great, and he is one of the all-time greats. Yeah. It's something you don't necessarily love. And I'm glad you brought him up. I once had an interview with him on this radio row years and years ago. And to be really I'm trying to be fair here. Maybe I'm wrong when I say this. I don't think that he really knew who he was talking to, but he had something to promote, and he did these interviews. And I knew who I was talking to, all right? You know I was going to be ready to talk to William Lanier. We do the interview. It goes great. And he comes up to me the next day, and he says, hey, man, I got to be honest. I didn't know you had so many listeners because I got reaction and feedback the entire day. I don't think he knew he was on 200 stations.
Yeah.
But from me to you, dude, when William Lanier looked me in the eye and said, you did a good job with that interview, that meant everything to me. That was hard respect to earn.
Hard respect. And I even give you something else about
it. Give me another story, though. Not to cut you off, but you got so many amazing stories in that book. Is there somebody else with another anecdote that you can tell me about from the book? Whether circumstance, focus, something you didn't expect that you heard?
I give you another good one.
Yeah.
Mike Singletary's story.
Okay.
Mike was the youngest out of nine, 12 years old. Two of his brothers accidentally died. One drowned, another one, carbon monoxide, fell asleep in the car. His father left the family. He grew up in a Pentecostal household, so therefore they were not allowed to participate in any sports. His mother looked at him at the time when all of this happened, both of his brothers that died, and she said, Mike, I need for you to be the man of the family since nobody is here. I say, Mike, what did you do? He said, Taquillo, I looked at my mother and I just cried and I went to my room and started to write. And I said, what did you write? He said, little did I know I was writing out my vision board for the rest of my life. So I'm thinking, okay, Mike, so what was on this paper? He said, well, I wanted to earn a Division I scholarship. Check, he went to Baylor. I wanted to be an All-American. Check. I wanted to be drafted in the first couple of rounds. He did that with the Chicago Bears. He wanted to become All-Pro. He wanted to win a Super Bowl, and he wanted to go to the Hall of Fame. He wrote all of that down at the age of 12 years old when he was in so much just emotional stress at the time. At 12 years old, he wrote that down, and all of it came into fruition. But what I will tell you what makes Mike Singletary so special, his faith and his belief in knowing that with my faith, I know I can accomplish anything. I may not be the most athletic. I may not be the guy who is, you know, the glamour glitz guy. But by my will, I will defeat any man just because of my faith. And that's the way that he lives his life. I had the opportunity to be coached by him. And he was the same way every day. And you talk about compliments. For him to give you a compliment, you felt, you know, you waiting on it. He'll make you wait for it now. You got to, it's earned. You got to go earn that thing. But the thing I loved about Mike, though, is he was always consistent, and he would push you until he get the best out of
it. That's all you want as an athlete. You want guys to be consistent and to shoot you straight and look you in the eye and tell you the way it is and be consistent. Taquillo, last thought then. So at this point in your life, what makes you tick? Where's your motivation coming from now?
My motivation is coming from giving back. And I found a way to be able to do this with my book. That's the reason why I came out with the initiative, hashtag Real Men. Real Men Read BTM, meaning Behind the Mask. And what that means is that I found a way to give back to the community. So with these guys, I just started. You'll start seeing guys start posting Real Men Read BTM. What we'll do is get them to post, and from their favorite charity, I'll give a descriptive of who they are and what they're doing in the community. Whatever books we sell within a certain time period, I'm going to give half of the profits back to his charity. And I feel like, because so you know how it is with athletes, all the time people want us to do something, but they don't have any skin in the game as far as, well, what are you going to do for me?
Right.
And so this is my way to not only collectively do something together to where we're helping each other out, but we're reaching so many people by sharing these great stories that they really need to hear and also helping the charity as well.
Cameron Jordan is my guest. Cam, I've been waiting all week long, not only to see you, man, and you know that, but all week long to see somebody I can talk watches with. You broke out your Sky Dweller.
Yeah, man. I would say I look forward to seeing you. You know, you always have a different piece on. It's inspiring, you know, because, of course, you know, you got your Submariners, you got your Hublots, APs, but just to come in and talk watches, you know, it's usually just me and my dad. So I come in and we talk about it for a quick second.
God, I love it, man. And just a quick second, because, you know, people people don't want to hear that, and I get why they don't want to hear that. Like, hey, D-bag, we don't want to hear about your watch. We don't care about your watch. Except watch guys stick together, man. Right. And can I tell you, there's fewer of us now because people now rock Apple Watches. They don't need a watch because they've got their phone. We're a dying breed, yo.
Very true.
Watch guys got to stick together.
Right. It's like you know, there's a lot more car guys in this world. Like, hey, you know, and I'm not. I just, you know, I have one car, and it gets me from point A to point B, but I have watches, you know. I feel like it's like the finishing touch to a lot of things in life.
Because guys can't, yes, exactly. Conor McGregor's a big watch guy. And believe me, when I talk to him, he'll talk about that all day long and maybe talk fights. But he can't wait to tell you what watch he's circling.
Right.
All right, so do you have one on your radar? Is there something you don't have? And I'll move on. But is there something you don't have yet that you've been circling that you want to pull the trigger on?
Yeah. Like, so, you know, I was just talking to you about it, that it's a two-tone Patek. And, you know, as much as you'd love to just rush in, I had to wait till I reward myself, like, with Pro Bowls or, for this year, Pro Bowl All-Pro, which is the catalyst to trigger. And I'm probably going to pull the trigger on it soon.
That's the thing, dude. Behind every great watch, there's got to be a story, right? You can't just get it because you can.
Right.
You want to have a, you want to buy it a certain way, right?
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, for my first Pro Bowl, it was, like, you know, a Submariner. Second Pro Bowl, it was this, you know. First got drafted, it was a Hublot. Like, you know, you can correlate each watch.
There's a milestone with every single watch.
Exactly. So now, you know, my fourth watch is going to be this Patek, most likely.
Good for you, man. Good for you. Patek's an unbelievable watch. And, you know, for the record, you and I right now are wearing the same watch. Mine's in white, yours in yellow. I can't pull off the yellow the way you can pull off the yellow because you're a stud. But even this watch is a story. I bought this watch in Florida. We owned a horse that won the Horse of the Year award, which meant a lot to me. Man, I love the animal, and it was the number one racehorse in the entire world. I want to commemorate that day with that watch. So every time I look at that watch, I think about that horse.
For sure. So that means you're a Kentucky Derby guy?
He got hurt. He was the favorite, and then he missed the Kentucky Derby. Next year, he beat the horse that won the Derby.
Okay.
So we had that kind of thing going on.
Right.
All right, thanks for humoring me, man. There's 15 watch people that are like, dude, keep going. This is awesome. But there's 8 million people that want to talk football. You're back in Minnesota. It's the site of a rather painful memory from a few weeks back. Have you erased that from the memory bank altogether, or is that still kind of in the back of your mind?
I'm going to let that be in the back of my mind for the entire offseason.
Huh.
I'm going to use that as a mode of motivation for this upcoming season. I mean, for us to go as far as we did this year, to start off 0-2, to have everybody looking at us like, you know, we were going to be another, you know, mediocre 7-9 type of season, and to fight back an 8-game win streak, finish the season, you know, first in our division, which is a tough division to do so, with Carolina and Atlanta fighting the way they were this year. To be able to come back that second half of that Vikings game the way we did, and to lose it all in 10 seconds, it's like I said, that's going to be motivation for the foreseeable future.
Dude, what's that like? What's it like to pay the price that you paid? What's it like to have 53 guys pay the price they paid and a staff and organization to do all the right things and be within 10 seconds of that thing and have it snatched? I mean, just ripped from you. Can you explain what that's like?
I still don't know if I can put it into words. And I guess the great thing is I don't have to. Because, you know, I feel like it was just a high-intensity, high-emotional game for us. And then, you know, I was like, I'm done with football for the year. Like, I'm not watching this. You know, my best friend, you know, Mike Kendricks is over in Philadelphia. I was like, as much as I want, you know, him to win, his little brother's over at Minnesota. So I had vested interest. But at the same time, I'm like, yo, I want nothing to do. I got to get away from the game, yada, yada, yada.
Yet here you are.
Yeah, I'll say my dad and brother are like, you know, text me during the Vikings game. I'm like, look, guys, somewhere in there, they're like, oh, yeah, you know, it's I don't even know why we're watching either. I was like, oh, yeah? Well, tell me more about it. Why are you not watching it? And, you know, they're like, hey, it's a blowout. I was like, and this is where I'll tune in. Appreciate this.
Wow, great.
All right, so, you know, the bitterness in me left quickly. And I mean, and honestly, when you talk about just the historic year that the Minnesota defense had, you know, for us to go that far against them, it's only going to bode well for the future. I mean, with our defense that was so young, like I said, hopefully we just keep evolving and advancing to the next step for next year.
Cameron Jordan, my guest. So what about the Super Bowl? Do you watch that game? How are you going to treat Sunday? What do you do?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I don't really watch Super Bowls. You know, the joy has been taken out of me since, you know, I hit the league. In my mind, if I'm not in it, I really don't want to watch it. But we talk about what Tom Brady does on the field. You talk about how that Eagles defense has been playing. You can even go so far as to say, like, you know, my dog Brandon Cooks will hopefully have a hell of a game. My boy Mike Kendricks will hopefully have a hell of a game. And if, like I said, if I have to put a winner on it, I low key can't go against Tom Brady, but I'm pulling for my guy Mike and Malcolm Jenkins and Patrick Robinson. You know, there's so many, you know, Chris Long. There's so many great guys on the Eagles team that,
dude, I mean, they're more talented, right? I mean, they're a more talented team on paper. They're more talented. If you look at the lines, the line play, they seem like they're better on both lines too. I mean, I can make so many arguments for Philadelphia, except that the other team has Tom Brady
and Bill Belichick.
I mean, does that in and of itself carry the day?
Yeah, for sure. Again, as much as I can fight for the Eagles and the way that they're playing, I don't know if I'm going against...
How can you?
Yeah.
But then again, it's not like they haven't been beaten before. They have been.
For sure.
On that stage.
Yeah, yeah.
Before that stage.
Yeah,
it's not like these guys haven't lost,
yeah,
right?
They can definitely lose on that stage. They've also won 5 times
right?
on that stage, so...
Thank you very much for listening, Clones. You know I appreciate you. We're coming to you all week long from the Bold North before the Patriots and Eagles get it on Sunday. Keep coming back for more. We'll see you next time. I'm out.